This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, God, it's a long time since I've been banned from Labour Ward, but rather reverse these days, in fact. It's an absolute privilege for me to be here, partly because my whole department and unit thinks it's a privilege to discuss our work, so that's been fantastic for us. And secondly, my mother is delighted with the mistake in the programme. I am not a professor. But my mother is delighted. It's nearly an ology, after all, you know. And after I failed biology A-level, she's never quite forgiven me. So maybe maybe that's been good. So thank you very much, the organisers, for that mistake. Okay. Well, I'm going to talk a bit about training. And I'm going to try and persuade you that training is definitely required. That some training can improve neonatal outcomes. But not all training is equal and not all training is effective. I think the key to it is it's got to be multi-professional training. We've all got to train together. And I'll present some data showing why that might be the case. And I think the bottom line is, I mean, just a bit as Professor Lankman was saying, a real professor, I believe, not a made-up one like me, you know, we've got to make the right way the easiest way. If that's a care bundle, if that's whatever, we've just got to make the right way the easiest way, and I promise you, even the most obstinate consultants would get on with it. So, let's have a look. I always say to the students, look, obstetrics is like the girl with a curl. When it's good, it's very, very good, and when it's bad, it's horrid. And I think we all recognise that description. It can be just fantastic, but sometimes it equally can be really, really tricky. And the King's Fund, very interestingly, for a panel of three people, none of whom were obstetricians or midwives, I think really identified very clearly and easily the key issues with maternity care today. And the bottom line is the overwhelming majority of births are safe, but some are less safe than they could and should be. And I think the key to it is safe teams. And I always take that to mean multi-professional. Now, do we really work in teams? I don't know if you've been on Labour. You know, I actually gave. You obviously do recognise the descriptions. I gave up gynae this year, partly because I was turning into a hairdresser. And secondly, to concentrate on my academic work. But you know, many anaesthetists said to me, "There's only two sorts of surgeons." Bastards, slow bastards. You think, thank you very much. And anyone who's done any drills easily recognise the anaesthetist because they just walk in and go, no, I'm doing the airway, don't they? You know, in the most critical voice they can find. And this is my favourite, the anaesthetic ABC of resuscitation. Now, I think any of us who work at the coalface easily recognise it, and I think we'd all know that this model has been adopted wholesale by the neonatologists. So look, you know, but we don't get on with it too much either, you know. I mean, this is actually was said to one of my... I had an SHO from Wigan, which in Bristol, an SHO from Wigan is not that common, and he had a rather straight talking, you know. And he actually said to one of the consultant anaesthetists after a particularly long delay in theatre, "How are you putting him to sleep? Alcoholics in a story." He said, "Use some drugs." Yeah, how long does it take? Anyway, but actually, it's symbiosis. It's a symbiotic relationship. It's about all of us working together. And this is a cartoon. Henry Wilkinson, a friend of mine from medical school, who's a GP now, he does cartoons. And I told him the story of an anaesthetist who said to me, "Look, you know, we had a placenta accreta, and it was an anaesthetic reg, and the woman, there were 13 obstetricians and midwives doing the section. Woman just bled and bled and bled until she had a hypovolemic arrest." The anaesthetic reg said, as soon as she arrested, all 13 went, "What do we do now?" You know, that is a key issue. It's about all of us working together. Of course, we can all be rude about anaesthetists. It's very easy. But it is about kind of what are we going to do about it? Now, in the States, you know, 1 in 12 labours, I mean, nearly 10% of labours associated with a poor outcome. And I think the shocking statistics from our own, you know, service is that 50% of poor outcomes to both mothers and babies could have been prevented with better care. And that's been exactly the same since 1997. It hasn't changed at all. Now, we've done lots of research and training, and I'm not going to do the whole lot of it because you'd be here all day and it'd be very, very dull. But I'm just going to show you some of our work for pre-training work from the SAFE study, a randomised, DOH randomised study of training right across the Southwest. And the hard facts are that actually we're not brilliant all the time. And in our region, less than 50% of our region could do anything more than what Robertson Supri pressure. This is midwives and obstetricians. Nearly half the teams couldn't get MagSolve started within 10 minutes. These are all simulated deliveries. And PPH management was similarly pretty awful. Now, you could say, it's because it's the Southwest, all you do is sit in the sun, surf, you know, drink cider all day. You know, it's not quite like that. We're quite an organised region. We have regional guidelines. You know, we like to think we're quite together. That clearly doesn't seem to be the case. Now, you know, there's recommendations we should train, and recommendations include teamwork training. I personally can't bear it when people tell me to be more like a pilot. Delivering a baby is not like flying a plane. You know, how many planes would you get on and say, hi, I'm the pilot, but you'll be flown by a nearly qualified pilot tonight. But if there's any problems on the way, then he can phone me at home. Right, okay. Yeah, maybe, you know, maybe I won't get on that plane today. You know, personally, I like the qualified ones, you know. But look, you know, and I can't bear it. I can't bear psychologists come to tell me how much I should be like a pilot. Now, I know that sounds a bit arrogant, a bit horrible. It's not. I decided I had enough of it. I just had enough of it. So I wrote to BA, dear Willie Walsh, please, you know, dear Jimmy Savile, please can you fix it for me to do... And I did the BA CRM course, the British Airways Crew Resource Management course. Very interesting. I had a great fun in the plane, that's me. And I'm rather shamefully wearing the same jersey, I've just noticed. I do have more than one jersey, but obviously... that's slightly embarrassing, isn't it? It's not the same shirt. Or trousers. Anyway, so I got on this plane, absolutely brilliant fun. And I said, you know, he said, do you want to go? One of the captains? I said, yeah, fantastic. So he said, where do you want to take off from? I said, Heathrow. Brilliant. So again, he taps it on the computer, and on the screen in front of you, it comes up Heathrow. It's exactly lifelike, okay? So you get in it, it was fantastic. So drumming down the motorway, down the runway. And he said to me, he said, look, I'll tell you what, I'll do the engines, you do the steering. He said, look, bring it back. When I get the engines going, bring it back to about 15 degrees, and you'll see these purple markers that tells you you're in the right place. So we're rumbling down the motor, and it feels exactly like you're taking off. Honestly, you go back in the chair, you know. Anyway, so the engines went, off you go. And I pulled the stick. I thought I was really good, you know, really good. And suddenly, the stick went right back in my hands. I went, oh, sorry, what happened there? He said, I said, 15, you're doing 2. He said, you're going to be driving really fast through West London in a minute. So I was absolutely terrible. But, you know, the hard facts are, I'm a much better obstetrician than that, can I say? The hard facts were, you know, they spend millions on simulation. But they only train the pilots. They don't train anyone else. Well, I said, well, don't you train everyone else? They went, no, can't afford that. Right, maybe. That's just like 2 consultants training. That's easy. We have to train the whole team. Let's have a serious think about it. So they spend millions on simulation. Let's have a look at obstetric simulation. Ha ha ha. Yeah. I've written a lot about shoulder dystocia in the last few years, and we've done a lot of simulated work. And someone said, can you come and give us a talk on shoulder dystocia? Don't bother bringing your mannequins. We've got some. Brilliant. I mean, that baby's been seriously damaged already. Look at the shoulders on it, you know. So that is, you know, maybe not doing the right thing. Okay. And I thought, this is just ludicrous. We haven't got any proper models for training. So anyone who's done any shoulder dystocia work at all recognise Edie Gerovich and Robert Allen's names, and they have a unit in Baltimore. And I thought, I'm going to go over there, because they kept talking about this model. It's the most biophilic model available. Now, I'd accept that, you know, the US and UK are two languages separated, two countries separated by a common language. But I thought biophilic meant lifelike. You know, and I you know, just have a look. Has anyone seen Toy Story 2? Hello? Hello? And I was... OK, there's the model. In fact, that's Joe Cross, my research fellow, who's looking disdainfully at this model. I've worked in Sweden, I've worked in France, worked in Africa, South Africa for a bit, worked in Bristol, worked at loads of places, London. I've never seen any woman, any conscious woman, labour in her socks. You know, there is no way that is going to happen, OK? So, you know, is this the most biophilic model? Well, I'm going to show you a video of it. OK, can you just click the video for me, please? Just have a look at this. This is a secret video of it. Watch this. Look, watch this. Look, watch.
Wait, I can't.
Oh, yeah. Don't worry about that, Den. That'll come out.
Oh, my God.
Look, here we go. Oh, yeah. Here we go. Oh, yeah. Ah, yeah. Here we go, yeah. That's just... I mean, you know, the most biophilic model in the world. Hello. Anyway, is it any wonder that we're not very good at training? Is it any wonder that we don't quite do all the things we can't do? This is about poor practitioners, good practitioners let down by poor training. This is about training. Everyone in this room, everyone in my unit, everywhere I've ever worked wants to be the best they can be. We've all been let down by poor training. And I'm going to talk about that. And not all training is equal. Let me just show you know, some ineffective examples of training. In the States, they spent $20 million randomizing 17 units to just teamwork training. It made no difference to outcome at all. It didn't even make their sections significantly quicker. Moses, a group in from Barts in London, I think the MPSA sponsored some of their work, and we had a look at the using their intervention in four units, two in London, two in outside London, again made no difference. Didn't even make any difference to how safe you felt after you'd done the training, let alone any hard outcomes for mothers and babies. And in Oxford, published at the end of 2007, I'll discuss the paper a bit more in detail a bit later on, they doubled the brachial plexus injury rate after training and doubled the HIE rate. No one set out to do that. It's just that's what happened. Let's do the hard detail of training and let's test it like we test other interventions in obstetrics, not just think it must be a good idea because it sounds lovely. Let's have a serious look at it. So... Training, can you click that for me? Now, this is for... You're probably all too young for this. This is old school teaching. What's a chignon, he says? Oh, yeah.
The ventouse is attached to the baby's head, like so. The doctor grips the handle and then puffs, creating a good, strong vacuum. And then with each contraction, he pulls, drawing the baby out. Now, the Kiwi Ventouse can also be used for rotational deliveries.
Rotational, brilliant.
The force of this can create a swelling, a chignon, that will often take many days to subside. The chignon.
OK, I think you all know what a chignon is, so... In that way, it's effective. I did show my own department and my own juniors, and we were doing some instrumental, and I was talking about it. And I showed them this video, and they went, one of them said, that's not where you put it, is it? Maybe my junior is a bit damaged, I don't know, but you know. Okay, so. Sorry. You couldn't just forward on the next slide for me, please. Okay, so we also had a look at, say, have I gone. Oh, no, great, cool. So this is a safe study. Now, this is just an example. This is one of the PPH things in the safe study. I just want to see how expensive you think that is. Not very. Okay, we'll talk about it. Okay, remember I showed you the Predator in the Safe Study, and what we did was we put a video camera in the ceiling of one room in all of the six units all the way down the southwest. And we videoed teams doing shoulder stones here, PPH and eclampsia. And what we did was we tested MCQ, pre-training, post-training, 6 months and 12 months after training to see what the decay was. And the hard facts are that people actually do it really well after training. They pick up really, really quickly. Remember I said before that nearly half the teams couldn't get on with MagSolf before in less than 10 minutes. After training, they got on with it much more quickly. These are posted, and this is Denise Ellis, one of our research midwives, is the first author on this paper, and it's published in one of the most prestigious American journals. So a good effort. It shows that midwifery research is kind of leading what we do. PPH, we had exactly the same advantages. Shoulder dystocia, that is in fact Denise on the left there. And I know she looks like she had a terrible car crash. but we actually integrate the model into, I'm sure you'll do the same thing, integrate the model into a patient actress, because actually one of the key things we need to talk about and teach when we're training is communication during the emergency, not just hoofing it out. Okay? So actually it's very simple and quick to do. And that on the right is one of the video screen grabs of, it's not one of the actual participants, it's Joe just testing the thing. So look, you know, why are we so bad at shoulder dystocia? I think it's very difficult to train for. And I looked at 450 consecutive simulated shoulder dystocia videos, both midwives and obstetricians, all the data from the SAFE study. And we saw the same things again and again and again. And the key issue is people can't... no one really knows what wood screw is. Rubens 1, Rubens 2, triple salco, wood screw. Rubbish. Rubbish. You know, no one really understands them. No one understands the eponyms. Let's simplify it out. People try and deliver the posterior shoulder, not the posterior arm, and people can't get their hand in. And it's really, really common. And I'm talking after McRobertson superior pressure. And this is what we saw all the time. This is on one of the models. Slightly more biofidelic than the last one, I think you'd agree. And so people try and get in laterally, they try and get in anteriorly, but also the commonest thing, people try and put they try and do a VE, they try and get the hand into the sacral hollow, but the thumb's out. And Jo, my research fellow, she always said, look, you've got to curl your hand up like it's the last Pringle in the tin. I always say, yeah, what? Who gets a Pringle out like that? But anyway... that you've got a curly hand up like the last Pringle in a tin. And just get your hand in, and then you'll get your hand in, and then you'll be able to do the manoeuvres. Now, once we taught people how to do that, you can improve very quickly to more than 83%. You can reduce how much force is applied. And interestingly, if you learnt with a patient actress, your communication score is significantly better than if you learnt with a million-pound mannequin. So there are a number of examples of effective training. In Liverpool Women's, they reduced the core pH less than 7 by 50%. Interesting, in Copenhagen, just published this month, 2 months ago, in ActiveScan, after they started training the whole department, they reduced their midwifery sick leave by 45%. And certainly the midwives there who I've spoken to said that actually sometimes if you're slightly intimidated going to work, you don't feel confident about being able to deal with things, it doesn't make it a very good place to be sometimes. Beth Israel, that's a Harvard unit, they also have noticed a reduction in adverse outcomes, and they've reduced their litigation costs. In my own unit, all UK data sets start in 2000, don't they? Because CNST. I'm sure none of you are doing CNST at the moment. Maddest bureaucracy in the world. I didn't say that. Okay, we started training a single system for all staff. It's absolutely mandatory in our department. It is mandatory. You will not pass your NHS appraisal if you're a consultant unless you have been to your intrapartum update day. Most of my colleagues worked out very quickly that you need a valid NHS appraisal to practice privately, so strange they all come. You know, these things aren't difficult. And I think the key to it is, and I'm going to try and demonstrate a few of the things, you've just got to make the right way the easiest way. Okay. all recognise that. Nice electronic field medicine guidelines. Nice kind of issue. It's 127 pages, I think, the NICE guideline. And it comes down like Moses, doesn't it? And tablets of stone, right? You must do this, you know. Just quickly make this work at the coalface. And you think, what? Okay. And then in fact, it all changed 4 years after that, didn't it? When the NICE Interpartum guidelines came out. And now you've got to remember, is it 50% variables in a full moon, less than 30 minutes? it's quite complex now, isn't it? Don't you think? I think it's complicated. And also, you have to document it every hour. You have to make a decision on the trace every single hour. Okay? So let's make your life easy. This is what we do. I'm sure lots of you got stickers. This is a CTG sticker. Put it in the notes, and you circle it just like the old Bishop score. Okay? It tells you what's right, what's not right. It's an aid memoir. If it was more expensive, you could call it decision support. It's dog cheap. Just put a sticker in the notes. You've done the recording. Helps you do everything. Definitely worthwhile. You can download them from our website. Easy. So, okay. But you have to train people to use your system. You can't just bring in the stickers thinking it's just like a magic thing that works by itself. We've got to train people to use them. So in our days, you can see that here's a trace, and you have to fill in the sticker. Now, the department we've got 8 years of these workbooks, probably. If someone wants to email me, I can probably get you some. And everyone has them. I've got to be quick. Yeah, sorry. Okay, what happened when we brought it in? Okay, we got a 50% reduction in HIE and low amp gas. And you might say, easy to get 50% reduction if you're a terrible unit. Okay, we're the bottom blackest in 6,000 deliveries. Okay, we've got the lowest stillbirth rate, anyone over 4,000 deliveries. This is not a terrible unit. Shoulder dystocia, in our department, we demonstrated a 70% reduction in brachial plexus injury rate. Oxford doubled theirs. Bristol and Oxford, very similar demographically. Why is that? Both started training in 2000. They thought it trained maybe about two-thirds of staff. We're about 96%. Ours, they separated their doctors and midwives. Ours was absolutely multi-professional. They used a slightly simpler model than us. We used the limbs and things one. We didn't use helper because I can't remember it. I can say it. And I'm really good at the H, because that's help. E could be evaluated episiotomy, elevate legs, something else. P is panic, as far as I can remember. Basically, the bottom line is, McRoberts, call for help, McRoberts, superhuman pressure, delivery posterior arm, or internal rotation, whatever suits you. Okay, quickly. We use patient actresses. They're very cheap. Okay, that's Margaret, one of our old HCAs. She's retired. She's 72. I mean, I'm not saying she's cheap. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, yeah. but she's fantastic, and you don't have to plug her in. She gets onto the bed herself, and you don't have to program her. Okay, bleeding. This is what the midwives call the big knickers. That's how we do the sterilization. That's Anne Remmers, our head of midwifery, doing an arrest at home. So we do home-style stuff as well. Okay, quickly, teamwork video. Could you just click this? This just shows why men shouldn't be allowed in delivery rooms.
You got a light, mate?
Yeah, I have. Hold this one.
Good enough. Can you hold up for a minute?
Yeah, sure. I'll take care of that.
Okay, click on to the next slide, thanks. Click it on. Thank you. Okay, teamwork's important, all right? But actually, the SAVE study showed us that working and training in teams improves team working by itself. You don't need extra teamwork training, all right? What you can do, what we do when we do the drills, is we get one of the group to feedback to the rest of the group.
So we usually train in groups of six or eight. Otherwise, there's quite an authority gradient sometimes. But once you've been together all afternoon, actually, you're kind of into it a bit more, and it's, you take the feedback much better from your own group. But what we do is structure it so people, yeah, was it clearly worded? You know, did you address the message, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? Okay, so why don't we make these things easier? Let's do it. Okay, does that make a difference in practice? If you want to do a section, it's 38 bits you have to do between decision and delivery. I always say, shame it's not 39 steps, isn't it? But anyway, you need a minimum of 8 professionals have to be involved. A Cat 1 section, we all know, has to be done within 30 minutes. We looked at, after we started teamwork training, does it make a difference in real life? Here's a cool prolapse drill. We reduced the decision delivery interval by 40%. People got on with it more quickly, more smoothly, without terrifying the father. Get on, get these things done, and you can practice it like anything else. Interestingly, and the anaesthetists are mad keen on this data, because unfortunately it confirms to them that most of the delay is obstetric fannying around time, is which they always say. Now, but you can see that the GA rate goes down and the spinal rate goes up. People are less panicked into doing a GA. We can get on with a calmer, more assured, safer anaesthetic. So, Liverpool, us, Boston, Copenhagen, all effective units, what were the similarities? Okay, all of them had institutional-level incentives to train. CNST for us, and Harvard, the same. All of the training was local. None of it is in sim centres. None of it is off-site. All of it is in your own department. Teamwork in working teams was included in all of those things. There was 100% participation, or as near as damn it. And all of them were multi-professional. So, better training is definitely needed. Training improves simulated performance, and local training can definitely improve perinatal outcomes. But not all training is equal or effective. So let's make sure we do the right training, and let's have a think about systems in our own departments. Let's make the right way the easiest way. Thank you very much.
Have I got time for one story?
What?
Have I got time for one story? Why? Just quickly.
Only if it's quick and it's funny.
It is funny. It's funny. This is my favourite delivery of the last 4 or 5 years. The husband who stripped off for a section. Now, this, I don't know how it is in your trust, but we're so poor now in Bristol, husbands aren't allowed to wear scrubs anymore. They've got to wear a gown over the top of their clothes if they come in for a section. His wife was having a section for failure to progress, so an emergency, not an emergency. And she came in, and this chap, and I was scrubbing through the section, wife's having a spinal put in, and this chap, this is absolutely true, walked in like Norman Wisdom, walked in, clutching his gown at the back. And he said, "Am I in the right place?" Completely nothing on at all, apart from the clutching this gown. And I had to look away, because I am really horrible, and I was going to laugh out loud. And I looked across, at our HCAs, who are hand-picked from Bristol's hardest, heaviest-smoking women. Okay, even they looked away, you know. And I looked at this, and I looked across, and I looked at this his wife's having a spinal put in, and I looked at, and her face was, "You have ruined my whole life." And eventually, Fiona Donald, who's the anaesthetist, stood up, spoke. She looked up and she said, "Oh, she's much nicer to me." She said, "Oh, I tell you what, why don't you just pop out? Pop your clothes on. Come back when you're ready." The walk of shame. Thank you.